Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the band is out on the field. He's looking for the ball. We are so away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's full of that. Smith caught him right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks.
Let's get into it. Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good!
Welcome to this week's edition of the Sporting Edge. I'm here with my main man, Bubba. And Bubba, we got a lot of news to talk about this week. You know, we got UFC 200 coming up tonight. We got the British Open next Thursday. We got a lot of NBA free agency to talk about. But the first thing I wanted to start off with was Larry Brown of SMU just left out of the blue the other day, right as the main part of the college basketball recruiting season was about to kick off. He just got up and left. And Larry Brown has been notorious for doing stuff like this. He did it at Kansas. He did it at UCLA. He's coached so many teams in his career, but it seems that his selfish nature has yet again peeked through. I mean, Bub, what were your thoughts on the move by Larry Brown?
Well, I mean, I think it's typical. Larry Brown does this. He's done it everywhere he's been, and why would I expect this time to be different? I think that he does that on a regular basis. I mean, he's the Billy Martin of baseball, except Billy Martin used to get fired. He didn't quit, but Larry Brown just decides to quit all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, he demanded a five-year extension from SMU. I mean, the guy is already 75 years old. I mean, demanding an extension till you're 80, you know, the average life expectancy in this country for a male is 76. I mean, I see where SMU didn't want to give him that extension, but, I mean, you got to give Larry Brown some credit. I mean, he did some good things with the program, but, you know, just like most of his other stops in college basketball, you know, the program was marred by NCAA violations. You know, they didn't participate in the postseason last year. He won a championship at Kansas, but, you know, later they were banned from the postseason as well, along with UCLA. So it seems that although Larry Brown does some good things for programs, he's been notoriously known as a guy who picks up and leaves and leaves the school to deal with the rest of his crap. So I feel like this could be the last place that we ever see Larry Brown coach. I mean, he's an old man now. I don't think any NBA teams are coming after him. So I think this might be it for Larry Brown.
A guy like him, there'll be somebody that'll take him. He creates winners. Wherever he goes, he wins. You may not like the way he wins, but wherever he goes, he wins. Somebody will take him if he wants to still work.
All right, yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. And, you know, talking about some MLB, Matt Harvey is going to be done for the year. He's going to need season-ending surgery due to thoracic outlet syndrome. I don't want to get into the details, but it's something with his shoulder. And, Bub, this has been a disappointing campaign for Matt Harvey. I mean, a guy who was supposed to headline this rotation this year, pitched great last year, and it makes you wonder, you know, Harvey's camp was calling for an innings limit last year because they weren't sure how he was going to respond to the Tommy John surgery. Came out this year, never really looked the same, struggled, came back, made a few good starts, and recently has fallen off again, and now it turns out, you know, he's got a shoulder problem. And, you know, it was pondering non-surgical remedies, a possible injection. And now, you know, he's going to take the way out of surgery and miss the rest of the year. And I think, you know, this is a big blow to this Mets team. And not that he was pitching great this year, but, I mean, this guy was a Cy Young, you know, just a couple years ago.
I think it's a blessing for the Mets that he's gone. I think he's a pussy. I think that he should take the shot. and go for it. But you know, he made his bet last year with all that crap back and forth. I think he's been more of a hindrance to this rotation than a help. I think that the guys they got to worry about are Syndergaard and Mats. They got to hold up. But Harvey, if you're a tough guy and you're supposed to be a leader, you step up and take a shot, and then you have the surgery if the shot doesn't work. But obviously he doesn't have the guts to hang out there and take the shot, so he's going for the easy way out, the surgery and the season over. So the Mets will win without him. It'd be great.
Yeah, you know, and I was thinking, Harvey, you know, obviously for the past couple of years has been one of the best pitchers in the league. You know, definitely not this year, sporting a 4.86 ERA, 4-10 record. Definitely not up to par for his standards, but I honestly think this Mets team can do just fine without him. I mean, you look at the guys at the top of their rotation. Noah Syndergaard has been one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. And Jacob DeGrom, it seems like he's finding his form a little bit more. I mean, early in the year, I really wondered, you know, if Harvey and DeGrom were to continue their mediocrity throughout the year. But I think DeGrom's found his way. Steven Matz has been pitching through a little injury trouble recently, but has looked good. And, of course, you've got Bartolo Colon, the man, you know, making his first All-Star game since 1998. I think the Mets are going to be just fine with the way they've been hitting the ball lately.
I think it'll be fine. I mean, you know, listen, I think DeGrom and Harvey, when he was pitching, they did have the lowest run support, and it's hard to keep, you know, pressing all that pressure on your arm when you know you're not getting any runs scored for you. So DeGrom has pitched about five or six games in a row, very solid, and he should be back. And, you know, maybe they are a little tired from last year, but you see everybody else stepping up, and I think that they'll be fine. They're going to get some hitting here, and they just picked up, I'm not a big fan, but Reyes, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, this lineup has really turned it around the past couple of weeks. I mean, you look at guys like Asdrubal Cabrera, has had a power surge. I mean, Yoenis Cespedes has been hitting a lot better lately. You know, this lineup, I think, is pretty scary when it's on. I mean, you could say that about most lineups, but this Mets team, with the way they can pitch, I mean, in the playoffs, I really don't think you need a four-man rotation. I mean, it'd be nice, but I think with the guys they have right now, along with a guy like Bartolo Colon who can fill in that fourth spot, I mean, this Mets team, to me, is just as scary as they were last year. And, you know, coming in a tight division race with Washington, they've made up some ground the past week. So the Mets are still a team to look out for, with or without Harvey, and they're going to be without him. But my wonder is, you know, where does this leave Matt Harvey for the rest of his career? Does he make a comeback from this? Does he not? I mean, this surgery has pretty notoriously been 50-50. I mean, some guys, you know, like Jaime Garcia, you know, they've made comebacks, but some guys, you know, fall off the map and never come back again. So, Bub, my question for you is, you know, does Matt Harvey ever regain the form that he had a couple years ago, or is he kind of fade in the sunset and become an average major league pitcher from here on out?
I think Matt Harvey depends on his head. I don't think it's anything to do with injury. I think it's got all to do with his mind. And I think he showed his character was weak this year, that he had to do all these – they had to make all these exceptions for Matt Harvey and how to do it, what role to play. And it was just – it was sad to watch the dark night make the night darker. And, you know, it's a shame. But to me, again, this comes back to the mental toughness of sports. And to me, he doesn't have it.
Right. I mean, and we talked about a month ago, you know, he came out when he was really struggling. I mean, he could barely throw the ball across the plate. Came out and said, you know, there's nothing wrong with me. You know, I'm having some struggles between the ears. And, you know, like I said, I was very appreciative of him saying that. I thought it took a lot of guts to, you know, stand in front of the media and let alone the New York media and say that to the world, that he really wasn't comfortable with what he was doing, but, you know, he's willing to go out there. But this kind of makes me wonder, you know, was he hurt the whole year? I mean, this shoulder injury kind of popped up to me out of nowhere. I mean, I knew that he was, you know, struggling with the actual, you know, pitching of the ball, but I didn't think it had anything to do with the injury because, like he said, you know, he was having some mental struggles. So I really don't know how this injury played out. You know, was it because he threw too many innings last year off the surgery? Did it just pop up out of nowhere? But definitely an interesting piece of news that I don't think will affect the league, you know, as much as a big name as Matt Harvey is. Like I said, I think this Mets team will be just fine. But, you know, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about some NBA, you know, some big moves. You got KD, D-Wade on the move. So if you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm, and we'll be back right after the break. Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. So, Bubba, before the break, said we were going to get in the NBA. I mean, we got a lot of moves coming. But before we talk about the big KD decision and Dwayne Wade to the Bulls, You know, I wanted to talk about a team that I think is having the best offseason so far, you know, when it comes to the draft, when it comes to picking up free agents. I think it's got to be the Boston Celtics right now. I mean, they're doing some great things. Danny Ainge picked up Al Horford. I mean, besides KD, I thought this was the biggest signing of the offseason. And people kind of question their draft, taking Jaylen Brown at number three. But, you know, through a few summer league games, it seems like he's kind of finding his form. They've got a lot of young guys. They got a lot of draft picks still in the next couple years coming up. I mean, this Boston team, I think, is shaping up, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years from now for being the next powerhouse team in the NBA. What do you think, Bub?
Well, you know, I like Stevens, and you know I like Boston, and, you know, we talked about the questionable draft choice, but apparently they had all these other moves in place, which is what I said, is that, you know, you got to see what their bigger plan is, and it may not be just a draft. Now, I'm not really a huge fan of Al Horford. I like him. I mean, I think he's great, but I think he's old, and I think he's kind of worn down. But, you know, it may help the team, and it may just be what the doctor ordered for them, and he may actually help, you know, Solinger become better than some of the other guys around him. So I like Boston, I like Stevens, and I think you're probably right.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's going to be tough to compete in the East as long as LeBron James is still playing basketball. But if there was one team looking forward, I think it's got to be the Boston Celtics. I mean, last year we saw what they did. They won 48 games. And when you take a look up and down their roster, there's really no superstar names. I mean, you got a lot of pretty good players who came together and played really well, and I think a lot of that had to do with Brad Stevens. I mean, Danny Ainge, I think, is one of the better GMs in the league. And I think this Boston team has a lot of good stuff, you know, going forward. You know, like I said, 3 or 4 years from now, I think they're going to be great. I don't know. It's going to take a couple years for this team to get going, but, you know, hopefully Al Horford can play at the level that he played at in Atlanta. I thought he looked a little weak down the stretch for the Hawks. I mean, I thought he got a little burned out. That team was, you know, constantly making the playoffs, making it to the first round. They just couldn't get it done. I mean, they had a lot of good players on that team, you know, Paul Millsaps, Kyle Korver, DeMar Carroll a couple years ago, but they really just couldn't get it done. And I think this could be that kind of career, you know, revitalization for Al Horford. And you know, I think he's going to be an all-star next year. I'm projecting that he'll be one of the top three centers in the league. And you know, I think this Boston team is going to be a scary team down the road. But, you know, like the Cubs did last year, maybe, you know, they could jump the route and be contenders a couple years before people think they're going to. But, you know, we got to talk about it now. Kevin Durant goes to the Warriors. But were you surprised by the move? Do you like it? You know, what were your thoughts? I mean, this is the biggest free agent signing since LeBron, you know, went to Miami, I think it was 6 years ago. What do you think?
I think it's a great move. I think Kevin Durant proved that he'd rather win than take the money. He could have certainly gone into a one-year deal with Oklahoma State or Oklahoma City and gotten more money. But he's proving that, you know, many of the athletes that they want to win. And you know what? I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, if he makes $120 or $130 million, is it really that big of a deal? And it's not. So, I mean, it's not to them. So, to me, I think the guy said, I'd rather go in and win, and he's willing to do that, which is, I think, an important thing because we've seen, you know, very few guys have done that. But, you know, a Tim Duncan did that to take less money. So he took less money to go there. Now they're going to be a powerhouse, and this could be a really key piece for the Golden State Warriors because now they can bring an additional part to the game, which they didn't really have before.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you bring in, arguably, I mean, he's definitely, I think, top, I'd say third best player in the NBA right now behind LeBron and Curry. I mean, it's a monster of a team. I mean, you've got Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green. They sign Zaza Pachulia. I mean, you can make an argument that they've got two of the best three scorers in the league in Curry and Durant, and they've got two of the best three-point shooters in the league in Curry and Klay Thompson. I mean, the only thing I don't like about the move, and like I said, nothing against Kevin Durant, but, you know, I hate to see, you know, probably the best team in the NBA acquire one of the best players. I think it takes away from the competitiveness of the league. I would have loved to see Kevin Durant sign back with Oklahoma City. I mean, you know, they were one game away from beating these Golden State Warriors. They were up 3-1 in the conference finals, and they pretty much melted down for three games. And I really wanted to see Kevin Durant come back and take that team on his own to win an NBA championship because I definitely thought he could have done it. You know, had the Thunder beaten the Warriors, I thought they could have definitely taken down the Cavs. I mean, I know we thought the Warriors would sweep the floor with the Cavs, but you know, it turned out LeBron is LeBron, and Kyrie Irving played a great series, but I thought this Kevin Durant-led Thunder team definitely had a chance to make some moves. And, you know, like I said, nothing against KD, but from a competitiveness standpoint, I didn't like the move that much. I mean, I think Steph Curry came out and said, you know, there's no saying we're going to go 82-0, nothing like that. But I think anything short of an NBA championship for this Warriors team is going to be an extreme disappointment. I mean, a team that was supposed to be by far the best team in the league adds, you know, the third best player in the league. They already had the second best player in the league. I think it's championship or bust. No matter what anybody says, if they don't win a championship this first year, it's extremely disappointing.
Well, they had a bust last year when they didn't win the championship. Of course, it was stolen from them, but they didn't win it. So that would have been a bust. You set the record for wins for games won in a season and don't win the championship. That's a bust. So now you add an unbelievable player to your roster. You better win the championship or you wasted your money signing him.
Right, and I kind of want to see how the dynamic works in Golden State next year. I mean, that is a lot of mouths to feed. I mean, you got the reigning MVP in Steph Curry. Klay Thompson's a guy who could easily average 25 points a game. And you got Kevin Durant, who's, you know, maybe the best pure scorer in the league, you know, on his own. And you got Draymond Green. I mean, I want to see how the dynamic works because, you know, this team on paper is basically an all-star team. I mean, if you play the Warriors against the Eastern Conference All-Stars, I think it'd be a pretty decent game. I mean, you look at the roster up and down. You know, yeah, they probably are not as deep on the bench anymore, but, I mean, they still got Andre Iguodala. I mean, this team is, on paper, is unbelievable. And to me, it kind of, you know, even puts the NBA regular season down a little bit more because, you know, why do I want to watch 82 games when I basically know all the playoff teams and know that it's going to come down to the final few teams? So overall, I applaud Kevin Durant, you know, for doing what he wanted to do, going to win, but, you know, with this team wins, it's not going to be as special, I think, as if he had, you know, won it with the Thunder or won it with a team where he was the main guy, because this team should win. They're expected to win. They're going to be huge favorites to start off the year. I mean, I'd have to think, Bub, that they might be even money to win a championship next year.
Well, I don't know if they'll be even money, but they're going to be close. They're going to be a shorter price as you're going to see. In this environment, it'll come down to injuries and luck. But again, you know, as we saw last year, I mean, you know, the officials have something to do with it as well. But overall, on paper, but the good thing about sports, they don't play them on paper. And the only lock they put on sports is they put on the gates. So we'll see how it plays out. And it should be rather another boring NBA season until the playoffs because we know probably 80% of the field today.
Right. And I think the next biggest move that I want to talk about is Dwayne Wade finally leaves Miami. He's been a Heat lifer, 13 years on the Heat, leaves Miami to come back to his hometown, Chicago, to play for the Bulls, signing a two-year, $47.5 million deal. I mean, I thought the Bulls were headed for some dark times, and even still, you know, maybe now they're on the edge of the playoffs. They signed Rondo. They've got Wade. They've got Jimmy Butler. But, I mean, this Wade move I thought was pretty big. I mean, I thought Dwayne Wade was done 2 years ago, but it seems like he found a little life last year.
He's done. He's coming home for the free $47 million. He just got pissed off at Miami. They're going to have no chance next year, so he might as well finish his career in Chicago. I think he'll be average at best. I think the Bulls are going to suck anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Rondo stinks. I mean, he can't stay with any one team for any length of time, which tells you he's a cancer. Wade's a whiner, except when he's got the best of it. And Jimmy Butler's the greatest, but unfortunately, he's going to have no surrounding cast. I think they're just mediocre as well as Wade is now just mediocre.
Right. I mean, I think best case scenario, maybe we hook it up for a 4 or 5 seed in the East, but I don't see this team really making any moves in the playoffs. But, you know, I've been wrong before. I preached Golden State for 82 games and into the playoffs, and they got beat by the Cavs. So, you know, who knows? I mean, Robin Lopez, I'm not a big fan, but, you know, could do some things. That's all the time we have here in the Sporting Edge. If you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm, and we'll be back after the break.
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge. Bub, we got the British Open coming up this Thursday, and an early look at the favorites. Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, and Jason Day are going to kick off at 8-1. Some other guys near the top, we got Adam Scott at 22-1, Ricky Fowler, Justin Rose, Sergio Garcia, Brandon Grace, Henrik Stenson, all getting out of the gates at 28-1. You know, what's your take on the field? Who do you think is going to pull it off this year, and what are you looking for starting Thursday?
This is the greatest golf tournament of the year because the first thing is it starts at 2 o'clock in the morning, so I get to watch it while I'm working. So that's the first thing. But the other thing that's really great about it is the weather is so questionable, and you want to talk about rough golf. This is it. The Open Championship is the meanest, toughest. I mean, you could see weather. It could be 90. It could be 30. And I've seen, obviously, some of the biggest meltdowns over the history in that tournament. I think that it's hard to pick a favorite because it's just such a challenge. Every shot there is a pressure shot. You know, it's the link-style course, no trees, a lot of fescue, a lot of bunkers that you can't get out of. So I think it's going to be great. I mean, I expect to see somebody come out from unknown. We've seen a lot of unknowns come out. John Daly won there. We saw, I can't remember his name, but went in a playoff, Constan Rocha. And, Tom Weiss, Tom Watson had the lead 2 years ago or 3 years ago at 52 years old or 55 years old. He had to make a putt to win the thing. So it's hard to say. It's a great tournament. I'm excited for it. I can't wait because, again, the weather is so iffy, and those greens are like putting in a bowling alley. So I think it's going to be a great tournament, and it's a lot of fun. And of course, again, it's on early, so I get to watch it early.
Yeah, I mean, you got to love some early golf. You know, some of us over here are working, we're waking up early, and what a better way to start off the day with some golf. You know, to give my two cents, if you're looking at a long shot, I think my favorite guy has got to be Brooks Koepka. He's 40-1. I think a great value play here. I mean, I know you got a bunch of the big favorites going, but I like Brooks Koepka. I thought he played pretty well in the U.S. Open. But let's move on to a lesser-known sport, but a rising star in its own presence, the UFC. We got UFC 200 coming up tonight, and, you know, to be honest, I'm severely disappointed because I was looking forward to this for a month. You know, there was a ton of big fights coming up, and I wanted to see, you know, the best pound-for-pound fighter in the past 20 years. John Jones was scheduled to rematch Daniel Cormier for the UFC light heavyweight title. You know, John Jones was undefeated in his career, lost one time by disqualification, but was clearly, you know, the biggest, baddest man on the planet. And he's gotten suspended. Drug violations, you know, a week before the fight. And, I mean, you know, his opponent, Daniel Cormier, I think is one of the realest guys in the MMA, in UFC. I mean, I watched a clip of Dana White, who's, you know, the head of UFC, telling Cormier that, you know, John Jones would not be fighting, and, you know, he was brought to tears. And I thought, you know, that's how much this fight meant to him. I mean, these guys faced off last year. And, you know, John Jones won, I thought, pretty convincingly. But, I mean, this was going to be a rematch for the ages. John Jones ran into a lot of drug problems and supposedly was sober. And I don't know if this test means he wasn't sober, but, you know, maybe he, you know, he was shooting up steroids or something. I mean, I hate it. I hate it for the UFC. This is supposed to be the biggest fight card of all time. Ton of great fights. We got Brock Lesnar coming back to fight Mark Hunt, you know, UFC heavyweight. That was going to be entertaining. We got Miesha Tate trying to defend her woman's title. I mean, we got Jose Aldo coming back after getting knocked out by Conor McGregor, and the night was going to be capped off with Daniel Cormier versus John Jones. That's not going to happen anymore, and I have to say I'm severely disappointed. I think John Jones, you know, he might never come back from this. I mean, if it comes back that he tested positive for steroids or other drugs, which I would have a hard time believing. But I think it was definitely, you know, an HGH, something like that. You know, it could be a 2-year suspension, and a guy who's 28 and hasn't been fighting all recently, I mean, it could be the end. And I really feel bad. I feel worse for Daniel Cormier because this guy, you know, he did lose to John Jones last year, but has come all the way back, claimed the title over Anthony Johnson when Jones vacated the belt. And you got to feel for the guy. I mean, these guys put a lot of work into training camp and getting ready for one of these fights, and it's crazy. You know, you train for 6 months for, you know, 5 rounds, 3 minutes, 15 minutes of action, and this fight was going to be really special because these guys really hate each other. I mean, they've been all over the media, and even at the presser, you know, they take their pre-fight pictures. They're cursing each other out. This was going to be an awesome fight, and it's not going to happen anymore. I'm still going to tune in for UFC 200. I mean, I think that, like I said, there's a lot of great fights. We get to see Aldo versus Edgar, a championship caliber bout. Get to see Cain Velasquez match up. And like I said, Lesnar, Brock Hunt, Miesha Tate. There's a lot of great fights still out there, but this one was disappointing for me. And Bub, do you want to throw your 2 cents in there about UFC 200?
Well, no, I mean, it's too bad. But, of course, that's why it might have been the best pound-per-pound fighter, because he might have been cheating. I'm not saying he was. I don't know anything about it. But I'm just saying that usually that's the case. And when a guy is that good and stands out and they do find something, you got to be worried about the consequences. But that's sports, and that happens in every sport. It doesn't matter where it is. There's still guys cheating in baseball. There's guys cheating in every sport. Everybody's trying to get the edge, and that's just the way it goes. So it's too bad because it's bad for the sport, but hopefully they'll get through it.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad for sport. It's bad for business. A lot of angry people, including myself. And it was funny, you know, talking about Daniel Cormier finding out the news from Dana White. I mean, not only was he moved to tears, but, you know, he was asking, you know, could we sign a waiver? And he's like, you know, I don't care. I just want to fight this guy, and I don't care what he did or what he's doing. And that's where the disappointment for me comes in. I mean, I wanted to see this matchup because it wasn't only going to be a fight. It was a fight to the death. And I think, you know, Daniel Cormier being an Olympic medalist, I mean, it really worked his whole life to come back here and lost to John Jones, like I said before. But this is something we may never get to see. It was kind of like the Pacquiao Mayweather thing that got put off for 7 years. I mean, it wasn't a very good fight. It was boring. But, you know, who knows? You know, 6 years before we get that fight, I think the guys are more in their primes, and this is the same kind of situation. I think we might never get to see this happen, and with John Jones, you know, not very old, he's 28, but I mean, this kind of stuff wears on you. I mean, he was basically a self-proclaimed drug addict and supposedly got clean, and that just simply isn't the case. So UFC 200 is still going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of great fights, but the main fight and the biggest fight on the card in a long time, it's not going to be there anymore, but we move on, and we move on to none other than Major League Baseball, Bub. We've got the All-Star Game coming up, so I thought we'd take a look at some of the awards so far. If we were going to give out awards, you know, midway through the season, I thought we could give it a little ring, and I'm going to start off with the NL MVP. You know, there's a few guys that could make a case, but I think the biggest case right now has got to be Clayton Kershaw. I know he's on the DL right now, but I mean, this guy has been absolutely unbelievable this year for the Dodgers. What do you think?
Him as an MVP? I don't think so. In my mind, pitchers have their own award, and I'm not a fan of giving them an MVP award. I mean, you know, unless they really did something. And, you know, of course, he's great, but he does not participate in 80% of the games. So it's hard for me to want to give the MVP of the league to a guy who doesn't participate. I would think there's much better candidates that should be considered. I mean, you know, you could look at a guy like even a Chris Bryant from the Cubs. You could look at a lot of guys that I think have done more for the team on a day-to-day basis, that they have more wins, and that would be the ultimate score, is how many games did your team win.
Right, and I think that's always tough with pitchers. You know, right, they are pitching every fifth day. You know, basically the case that I can make for Kershaw right now, I mean, he's just been so utterly dominant for this Dodgers team. You know, they're 14-2 with him, 34-38. Without him throughout his career. I mean, he put up such an insane strikeout to walk ratio. I mean, he's been unbelievable. And the guy that you mentioned, Chris Bryant, I think for me would have to be number two right now. I mean, he's been on a home run tear for what it seems like 2 weeks now. Hit three in a game a couple weeks ago. I mean, he's just been hitting home runs every day basically. He was the leader in WAR, third baseman so far. I think that's why he's getting the nod over Nolan Arenado in the All-Star game. It'll be interesting down the stretch because, you know, I really hope Kershaw comes back sooner rather than later. But, you know, the back, you know, the hamstring, stuff like that, that stuff tends to linger. So I would say the Dodgers are probably going to hold him out, you know, they're going to hold him out rather than bring him back because they really don't want him to miss the playoffs. And I think, you know, this Dodgers team is fighting for a wild card spot behind San Francisco. They're going to need Clayton Kershaw down the stretch. Their starting rotation isn't that great. They picked up Bud Norris last week, but, I mean, time will tell. But, you know, talking about this Giants team, this is another even year. They've won three World Series the past even years, and I think we might get a chance for a fourth. I mean, the way Johnny Cueto, Madison Bumgarner are pitching right now, I think that I would put them as my favorites right now. That's all the time we have for this part of the Sporting Edge. If you miss a show, find us on libertytalk.fm. We'll be back after the break to talk All-Star Game and the Home Run Derby. Welcome back to the Sporting Edge. And Bub, before the break, we were talking about possible MVP candidates, so we would touch on the Home Run Derby. I think we got to give a little love to the American League right now. I think this is a much closer race. I mean, you got, I think, four or five guys you can make a legitimate case for. You got Jose Altuve, who's hitting a monstrous 346, got 24 doubles, 14 homers already. Manny Machado, Robinson Cano, I think, have very strong cases. And, of course, you've got David Ortiz, who, I mean, is having probably the best year of his career right now. You've got Mike Trout, who's hitting 330 on an Angels team that stinks. I think that really hurts him. And you got Josh Donaldson, last year's MVP, who's hitting 305, 22 homers, and he's slugging over 600. This race is up for grabs, I think. Who's your favorite right now?
What about Trumbo? Did you forget about him, the home run leader? I mean, you know, it is a horse race, and, you know, I mean, for my money right now, I would have to look at, Altuve's bringing back the Astros, as you predicted. You thought they'd make a nice comeback when I said they were dead. And, of course, look at the Baltimore. They managed to hold on. So, I mean, I think you got to give Trumbo a lot of consideration of an MVP. I mean, certainly they're doing a hell of a lot better than anybody thought they would be doing.
Yeah, I mean, and Trumbo, I mean, is on pace to hit over 50 home runs. It's weird this year. It seems like we got a lot of high home run totals in the first half of the season. I think there's, you know, over 15 guys who are on pace to hit 40 home runs. Seems like we're kind of having a power surge this year. Talking about power, let's take a look at the Home Run Derby. Got an 8-man field, and of course we had the new rules last year, and I thought it was very exciting. I thought the change was going to be bad. I don't like change very much, but, you know, it worked out really well. Todd Frazier, it was awesome. But, you know, it's going to be a great race this year, and the guy I'm looking at is Giancarlo Stanton. He's seated at number 5 right now. We got Mark Trumbo at number 1. He's got 26 bombs. And matching up in the first round with Corey Seager, we've got 2-seed Todd Frazier matching up with the 7-seed Carlos Gonzalez. We've got Adam Duvall at number 3, who's been a godsend for the Reds this year, even though they stink. He's got 22 bombs so far. He's matching up against Will Myers, who's got 19. And then we've got our last matchup is the 4-5, Robinson Cano versus Giancarlo Stanton. It's interesting that we bring up Stanton because, I mean, he was absolutely struggling for the early part of the season. And this past few weeks, I mean, he's been on a tear. Had four home runs and four at bats. You know, was one of the first guys to do that. I mean, there's not many people who can do that. And the question is, you know, is doing the home run derby, is that good for him? And my view that it is. I know he's been hot recently, but this guy hits home runs, what he does for a living, and I think he needs to get back to that power swing, which he has lately. But I think, you know, he could be a guy who could hit 25 bombs in the second half. What do you think, Bub?
Well, first of all, I hate the home run derby for my guys that I have in fantasy, because they always seem to fall apart when they come back from the home run derby. I think it changes their swing. Now, in Stanton's case, he's been way off. I mean, he's just recently come back, and he's the one guy that Barry Bonds has not really been able to help, and he's been, I think, in this case, more of a hindrance. I am not a fan of the home run derby because it's just too damn long. It's not fun, which is why none of the big guys really want to do it. You know, Trout and Harper and guys don't want to do it because it's just too time-consuming, too tiring, because it's done in a crappy format, and it needs to be, I think, revamped to make it more exciting and more fun. And then I think you could have a more fun derby. But I don't like my guys in there because, to me, they always come back and they struggle coming back in the second half of the year.
Yeah, you know, I could definitely see that. There's been plenty of cases over the years that, you know, have had great derbies and just absolutely struggled the second half of the year. But, you know, I think we got to dive back into the power rankings here. I mean, this is a sad day. The Cubbies are no longer number one. And I think with good reason. I mean, they've been struggling. You know, Dexter Fowler, it seems like, is a key cog. I mean, they're 9-13 without him. They're 43-18 with him. CBS Sports has the Cubs at number five right now. I mean, they've been passed up by four teams. And number one, I think, you know, is clear cut in the past few weeks. It's been the Cleveland Indians. I mean, they were at a 14-game win streak. Their pitching has been unbelievable. They're a scary team, I think, going forward, especially with Trevor Bauer, you know, pitching out of his mind the last month.
Well, I mean, you know, look, the Cubs is like any other team. They go into a little bit of a slump, and, you know, Jake Arrieta has been really less than average on his recent starts. So, you know, you're going to have problems like that, but they all go through slumps. But the Cubs, for my money, are still the best team man for man because they're just so deep. And they've got everything. Yes, Cleveland had a great run, but they'll fall back into their ways as they always do. Texas has struggled lately. I think the team to worry about is the San Francisco Giants, as you mentioned, you know, a couple segments ago. I mean, look at Johnny Cueto. You want to talk about somebody playing out of their mind? I mean, he right now is the best pitcher in baseball, 13-1. I mean, he's unbeatable. And even when he's not good, he manages to stay in the game long enough to get the win. So the Cubs are still by far, in my opinion, number one. They still have the best team. I think they'll end up with the best record. And then we'll see what happens from there. But again, they all struggle. And everybody goes through a little bit of slumps. I think this is just, you know, they're a little tired, all the hype. So that's what I think we'll see.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a key point, a lot of these contending teams, I think their biggest struggle is the bullpen. I mean, you look at the top five teams, Cleveland, San Francisco, Texas, the Nationals, and the Cubs. I mean, the bullpens for those teams are not very good. And that's where I think you're going to see a guy like Aroldis Chapman move at the break. I think possibly Andrew Miller is going to be moved at the break. You know, there's some teams, you know, the Braves got some flamethrowers in that bullpen. There's definitely some guys that are going to be on the move, and I think these contending teams need to go out and get somebody. I mean, and not talking about relievers, but I think Rich Hill for the Oakland A's has had a career year. I mean, he had a little injury, came back on Thursday night, and had an unbelievable start. I think you're going to see some bullpens move around, but, you know, rounding out the top 10, we got the Toronto Blue Jays, Baltimore Orioles, L.A. Dodgers, Astros, and Mets. And then those are just power rankings. I mean, these aren't according to division or anything. But, you know, talking about divisions, we've had some races get a lot closer in the past week. You know, if you remember me saying last week, the closest race was six games, which is kind of absurd, you know, before the All-Star break. But, you know, we look at the American League East. We got three teams. Boston's three games back. Toronto's two games back of the Baltimore Orioles, and I think this is going to be a race to watch the rest of the year. I'm the most excited for this AL East race the rest of the year.
Well, I don't blame you. I mean, that's going to be a good race, and Toronto is severely underperformed so far this year. They do have a bad problem with their pitching staff, but so does Baltimore. And I think the key to this division is going to be who picks up a Sonny Gray or a pitcher like that. There's going to be some of those guys are going to be moving around, and they all need starting pitcher. I mean, obviously, David Price, he's still, I think, 8-5 or 9-5, whatever he is, but he struggled. But, you know, he's had a couple of bad starts, but he'll come back, and I'll say he'll win 10 games in the second half of the year. And, of course, Porcello's been pitching pretty well. But at the end of the day, they're going to need one more guy because it's really almost like an automatic loss in that 4-5 position every time they go out. And whoever picks up the guy, I think, wins that division. I think Baltimore, really, even though they're in first, is the least probability because they have the worst pitching staff other than Tillman, and even him, he's not a true frontline player, so that would be my eyes.
Right. I mean, I think this race is so fun to watch because these offenses are just mashers. I mean, you look at Toronto, you got Donaldson, Encarnacion, you know, Boston, Big Poppy, Mookie Betts. You know, Baltimore, they got Chris Davis, Machado, and Trumbo. I mean, it's fun to watch. You know, we take a look at the NL East. The Mets are closing in a little bit. They're only 3 games back now, and we talked about them before. You know, Matt Harvey's gone, but they still got a chance. The LA Dodgers, they're 6.5 back, not very close. The Cardinals are 8 games back, not a very good race. Houston, they're 6.5 back, but they are 7-3 in their last 10. Texas, the Rangers have been struggling. I mean, they're going to get Yu Darvish back, but, you know, like we said last week, they lost Colby Lewis for a while. They lost Derek Holland. You know, that's going to be a good race that we did predict that Houston would come back here on the Sporting Edge. And then we got Detroit, the White Sox, and Kansas City all at 7 games back in the AL Central. So we got, you know, a great week of baseball coming up. We got the All-Star Game. It's going to be fun to watch. You got the Home Run Derby, Celebrity Softball Game. You know, a great weekend to get away. Watch, we got 3 days in a row. And then we'll get back at it for the second half. But, you know, that's all the time we have today for the Sporting Edge. If you miss a show, you can find us on libertytalk.fm. We'll be back next week, same time, same station. Have a great weekend, everybody, and enjoy UFC 200 tonight.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.